This is CliffCentral.com. Please note that the views expressed and the advice provided in this show are for general advice and entertainment purposes only. Nothing stated should be treated as a substitute for your own independent legal advice based on your own specific facts and objectives. Therefore, the presenter and CliffCentral.com accept no liability of any nature whatsoever, either expressed or implied.
Law, like you've never heard it before. The Laws of Life, with Gary Hertzberg on CliffCentral.com.
I'm Gary Hertzberg, and this is the Laws of Life on CliffCentral.com. Today we are in support of those courageous women who have spoken out about being sexually assaulted and harassed by Hollywood film producer Harvey Weinstein. And these very violent stories that we've been hearing from the American women and also from our own Jennifer Ferguson, and they've described feeling helpless, depressed, insecure, all kinds of things, vulnerable and sometimes even suicidal as a result of what they had to go through. The pain they suffer is just so difficult to comprehend.
Till it happens to you, you don't know how I feel. How I feel. How I feel.
Till It Happens to You by Lady Gaga, hashtag Me Too. And Lady Gaga was also sexually assaulted, and she wrote this particular song to highlight the pain of sexual assault. And I believe that a portion of the proceeds was donated to victims of sexual assault. Very nice of her, very generous of her. The song is fantastic. Till It Happens to You. We know that workplace sexual harassment is rampant. In the UK alone, I read that they did a survey of 1,500 people, and of which 52% had been victims or have been victims of unwanted sexual behavior at work. And for women, and listen to this, between the age of 16 and 24, the percentage is 63% have been violated in some way or another. Joining me in studio today is specialist labor law attorney Johan Boortus, a partner in the Johannesburg office of Baker McKenzie, and I think a lot of us know that Baker McKenzie is one of the world's largest law firms in revenue and employees. A very warm welcome to you, Johan.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thanks for the opportunity to be here, and thanks for the showcase to raise this very pertinent and germane issue that we need to discuss.
Yeah, I think we're here today to advise our listeners, Johan, and you can help us on that, how the law protects you in South Africa if it should happen to you.
Yeah, amen. And may I say, heaven forbid that it happens to anyone, but we know this is it happens. The workplace is a little microcosm of society, and we're not shielded from what's happening in the broader society. But sexual harassment is a scourge, and hopefully listeners can take some pointers as to how to deal with it should this ever happen to them in the workplace.
Well said, Johan. We hope that today's show will serve as a wake-up call about raging sexual harassment. It's non-stop. You read it all over the place. And the tragedy is there's so many cases you don't read about that people keep quiet about because they're trying to protect something, either themselves, their jobs, or their employer.
And this is true, and I must say to you, as an attorney, probably the most gut-wrenching and difficult cases, you know, that come across my desk are exactly these ones of sexual harassment, because of the very direct and personal impact that it has on the victims. And I think part of the difficulty that many, and let's be frank, many women are the victims of sexual harassment, although, you know, it's not gender-specific, but by and large, women are still the victims. I think many women struggle with it within the workplace because they have this notion that nobody's going to believe me. You know, nobody's going to take my word against the senior executive or the senior colleague or the senior statesman here that I'm dealing with here. And that is one of the myths that I hope that we can explore today and try and dispel.
Cool. This is the further show in a series in which we collaborate with Legal Talk South Africa, and with their membership of 133,000, we are answering legal questions both they are and we are at Cliff Central, and I think we all of us for giving out the best legal advice. Our Facebook page, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Please have a look and give us a like if you can. And our Twitter handle is at Hertz Law. Johan, when we talk about sexual harassment, most of us think of the unwanted sexual advances, sexual assault, touching, inappropriate kind of conduct. But it's not just limited to that. It's very often when a woman refuses, if I can use the term, to put out. And one of the victims of Harvey Weinstein said, he said to her, "You'll never make it, baby. This is how the business works. You either do it or you're out." And tragic. Yeah. That's the sad part. So this particular girl fled, the one who said those words. She became a costume designer, ultimately, instead of a movie star. That's what he did to her.
And how tragic is that? I mean, how tragic is that somebody that probably has heaps and mounts of potential cannot pursue their chosen career because the environment in which they need to operate has become so hostile that you actually cannot do what you set out to do. And that's one of the difficulties that what we see often with sexual harassment, that perpetrators of sexual harassment, these sexual predators, create an environment that is conducive to their conduct and that is hostile to women, where it's easy for them to become victims of sexual harassment. And they feel that, listen, they either have to put out or shut up.
Yeah. This very hostile work environment that you talk about, these women feel intimidated and they feel uncomfortable. Very often it leads to all kinds of side effects, emotional, psychological, of the well-being of the very person, and sometimes even to depression. And on that aspect, if I may talk to you about depression, we know that they refer to depression as the common cold of mental illness, because one in six South Africans tragically suffer from depression. How does the labor laws treat depression? Assuming someone is depressed, we're slightly off point, but they could be depressed as a result of being violated in some way. What is the law on this one?
So it's interesting. There was recently an opportunity for the Labor Appeal Court to have a look at this whole notion of depression, how you deal with it. And without, you know, getting bogged down in the details on the law on the issue, depression is viewed as a form of medical incapacity. So depression is like many other illnesses, whether it's alcoholism, whether it is mental illness, whether it's physical impairment, and the law views it as a no-fault issue. So it is not your fault that you became depressed. It's not your fault that you have a certain physical or mental disabilities. And what is expected of the employer is to provide reasonable accommodation of that. So the law sets out in Schedule 8 of the Labor Relations Act, there's a process that must be followed, and there are various considerations for the employer to take into consideration before terminating the service of somebody due to something like depression. And the Labor Appeal Court again said there, you can't just terminate the service of somebody due to depression. In that specific instance, it was a transient matter where it was said that you could have, in line with the recommendation that was made by the medical practitioner and the employee well-being program manager, you ought to have transferred this employee into another environment where the stress that caused the depression could have been alleviated. And the employer was faulted for not taking that sensible step under the circumstances. So the message to employers out there is that one needs to be certainly cognizant and aware of the fact that depression is viewed as a form of illness, and it should be treated along the same lines as you would treat any other employee who suffers from some sort of a physical or mental impairment.
So, Johan, the obvious answer is if an employee feels depressed, and we're not talking about just waking up feeling depressed one day. If it's psychologically or physiologically depressed, what should they do? They should go to the employer and say, "What? I need help." And practically, what kind of help is available?
So many employers have various forms of employee well-being programs available, where they can place certain assets at the disposal of the employee. The employee can be sent to a medical practitioner. The employee can be sent to counseling.
Who pays for all this?
There's no hard and fast rule on that. Yeah. Especially larger organizations would have funding available for such activities, but there's no absolute requirement in law that says the employer has to fund all of this. Many employers will look at the employee and say, listen, can your medical aid perhaps fund some of this? But I think the cardinal thing is, if an employee feels that he or she is suffering from a disability such as depression, take steps. Don't just leave it. Don't feel constrained because either there's no money available or you feel that the employer is not going to be sympathetic about it. The law places an obligation on an employer to be receptive to deal with these issues. And I've seen situations gone completely pear-shaped in the workplace where parties just don't deal with the issue for various reasons. I think the best advice I can give to employees is that there is protection within the law. And you will often be pleasantly surprised as to how receptive employers are in this day and age to come to your assistance. And worst case scenario, if they don't, you are not without recourse, but do something about it.
Okay, let's get back to the sexual harassment aspect. So many of our young, gorgeous South Africans are targets of sexual harassment, as we know. What advice, Johan, can you give to a young, inexperienced, eager employee who doesn't really have the experience to deal with being hit on, dealing with all these proposals that people are putting forward? You know, if you do this, I'll promote you, and if you do that, you know, you'll get more money and so on. What should they do?
So I think for youngsters going into the workplace, the first advice that I can just give them is perhaps read up on sexual harassment, have a conceptual understanding of what is acceptable in the workplace and what is not acceptable in the workplace. I think that will assist you just to go into this discussion armed and understanding that, because often I find that people think, but this is the norm. This is the norm in the industry. Like Harvey Weinstein is reputed to have said, you know, this is, you're not going to make it here if you don't put out, you know. Mm. Understand that I'm not aware of any workplace where that is indeed the acceptable business norm. Mm. So understand the issue about sexual harassment, firstly. Secondly, when I look back at the cases of sexual harassment that I've dealt with in the past, without fail, the victims of sexual harassment have said to me that they wish they did something earlier on. You know, don't wait for things to escalate and to get to a point where you now absolutely feel, listen, I can no longer put up or tolerate with this. Try and nip unwarranted attention, unwarranted action in the bud as early as possible.
What do they do? Do they say to the person, don't say that to me, don't touch me, don't look down my dress, don't stand too close to me? Is that what you do?
I 100%. And of course, I'm not sitting here, you know, in the comfort of an air-conditioned office and trying to dictate to people what they should go and do in the workplace. You know, I've got real appreciation for the fact that people's livelihoods depend on this. They need to earn a living. There's no one workplace is exactly the same as another one. But try and understand the situation that you're in and try and deal with create a response that's appropriate. So if it's you and a manager, for instance, and the manager makes a risque joke and it's only the two of you, then have the courage of your conviction to say to him, look, that may be funny, but I feel uncomfortable if you do this. You know, I would prefer if you just don't do this. If you're in a larger environment and there's a risque joke being made and you don't feel comfortable in making issue in front of everybody else, then go to the person afterwards and say exactly the same sort of discussion. Yeah. Of course, if there are more serious things that happen, then you don't have the luxury, in my view, to wait for the appropriate moment to raise the issue. I mean, I've dealt with situations where there was severe sexual assault taking place on victims. Then you do what you need to do. Make no mistake. I mean, you do what you need to do in order to protect yourself. Yeah. And don't feel alarmed by disparities in power or in position. You know, you do what you have to do in order to protect yourself. I would also say to especially female employees, young female employees, have discussions with colleagues in the workplace. In my experience, HR managers are generally very receptive and they understand
Well, they have to be.
I agree 100%. Yeah. But because they also deal with these issues and because of their studies and their background, their experience, they are more likely to understand the gravity of a situation than some, you know, with respect, manager on a factory floor who may not see the subtle nuances here. Yeah. Last piece of advice that I would want to give to potential victims of sexual harassment: raise the issue higher up within the organization if need be. I think at a lower level, at supervisory or junior management level, you may get people who don't pay heed to this, or you may get people who would turn a blind eye or would not want to rock the boat, you know, if I can mix the metaphors. But at a senior level, at a CEO executive level, I have little doubt that most people at that level understand how serious these issues are and would at the very least not want to be seen to not do anything about this. Mm-hmm. So within the context of where you are, you know, try and make the right call, but for all my money, do something about it. Don't just let it lie.
Yeah, and one of the defenses often raised by a person who's been accused or is accused of being what we call a harasser, he says, I was only trying my luck. That's all I was doing. What does that mean? What is legally when he says I was only trying my luck? So, is there such a defense?
No, there's no defense. I mean, and it reminds me of the defense, but you know, she was wearing that skirt. I mean, she was asking for it. She was inviting it. You know, it really galls me. Mm. I think, firstly, understand that within the context of a workplace, there are acceptable norms and behaviors and that we can expect of our employees. If you know, and let's also be frank. I mean, you're never going to be able to outlaw romantic relationships in the workplace. I mean, even if you have hard and fast rules on these things, it's very difficult to regulate behavior or people's emotions. Mm. But what you can expect of your employees legitimately is that they behave workplace appropriately. So if you have feelings for a coworker, you know, I don't think any employer can legitimately say to you, under no circumstances may you and your co-worker who have similar sort of feelings not go for a drink afterwards, you know, and enjoy each other's company.
Sorry, there are company policies that I've seen that say you may not, I don't know what the exact wording is.
Yeah, fraternize.
You can't fraternize with someone within the workplace or your manager.
It may well be that there are certain environments where the interaction between staff is of such a critical nature. I'm trying to think of, let's say, an emergency room, for instance. Mm. You know, there everything needs to happen with military precision there, and you cannot afford any sort of ill feelings to come into play there. But I must say to you, on a very practical level, I'm struggling to see how you will enforce and police and manage that. You know, I think sensibility will always prevail. But to get back to our issue here, I think it is never acceptable for a colleague to push his luck or to try his luck and just, you know, casting a line into the water and see what's going to bite, you know. Every employee has the right to dignity, and that dignity extends to the dignity within the workplace as well. And if you are an attractive or good-looking individual, that does not invite other people to disrespect your dignity and say, listen, let me try and see if I can, you know, try my luck with, you know, so-and-so from accounting.
Can I ask you a curveball question?
Of course.
Should naturally sexy men and women dress professionally to work, or can they dress sexily or too sexily? What should the answer be there?
I think within the context of sexual harassment, it can never be a defense that the victim of sexual harassment was dressed inappropriately and that warranted my behavior towards her.
She's wearing a very short mini. Well, she works for a law firm.
Well, then control yourself for crying in a bucket. Yep. You know, I mean, you're
one of the largest law firms in the world. Do you have a dress code?
We've got a very relaxed dress code. But what we say is we dress business appropriate. So depending on who you go and see and your clients and the people with whom you interact, you will dress accordingly. So today I'm wearing a tie, which I normally don't do because I'm seeing a client after this discussion. And their practice is that people wear ties.
Yes.
You know, when I go to a construction site, for instance, I'm not going to wear a suit and a tie.
Mm.
So within our environment, we're saying that you must dress appropriately for the workplace. But we're not saying, you know, you can't come dressed in a bikini to workplace because it's going to give the men are not going to be able to control themselves as a result of it.
If a male or female, if they're sexy, they're sexy. That's the way it is. And I don't think you can dictate what they should wear. If they are wearing a skirt that's shorter than you know, than normal, that's fine. Good luck to her. But just don't hit on her. That's
I think the more important thing, and this perhaps is a thread that goes through this whole environment and the workplace and what constitutes a hostile environment, what constitutes sexual harassment. I think every employee is under obligation to create a harmonious working environment and to create an environment where colleagues can get along with one another. It's actionable. I mean, you can be dismissed under South African law if you purposely set out to create an environment that causes conflict with your colleagues. So within that context, we expect everybody to, you know, hold hands and sing kumbaya, for want of a better expression, you know. So come to work, but don't dress in such a manner that is going to give offense to the majority of people. We don't expect everybody to be prudes, but we also expect you to have to be sensible and understand that different people have different sensibilities, and within that context, dress appropriately.
Well said, Johan. Let me tell you what one of Weinstein's accusers said. I'm going to quote. She said, "I learned that you shouldn't wear shorts even in summer." We make light of it.
It's unfortunate, man.
Yeah, that's the way it is.
It's so wrong. It's so wrong on so many levels, you know. But I can understand where she's coming from. I hate the society that we've become as a result of it, though.
Yeah. There's something that I want to raise with you, and it's something that a lot of guys generally feel a bit upset about. When there's an accusation leveled against them that they're harassing someone, they say, "But I'm just flirtatious. I'm a flirt by nature." Henrietta on Legal Talk South Africa, she says, "I now know why women in South Africa don't report sexual harassment." I'm quoting her. "I absolutely despise our justice system. Yes, on confrontation of the situation, the wife of the man who did this to me said he's just an extrovert and a jovial man." Yeah. What's the answer to that one if you're flirtatious? And it's taken the wrong way. "Hi, gorgeous. You look fantastic today. Love your skirt."
Now, that sort of behavior has no place within the workplace. Let's be frank about that. So if your natural disposition is to be flirtatious, then go and be flirtatious in the pub afterwards, or go and be flirtatious in your private life after hours on your own.
It's making us prisoners in the workplace. Or is that the way it is? You just do not comment on anything that anyone's wearing or saying or doing that could be construed as being harassment.
I think it goes back to that principle of saying, as an employee, if I'm there and you're paying my remuneration, you've got an expectation that I will behave accordingly. And I'm not going to create an environment where that is not conducive to your business. Mm. Your business is not the business of, you know, being flirtatious. Your business is the business of selling legal advice to people. Mm. So if I'm going to be that individual within your environment, on your dime, that now creates an uncomfortable environment that where people would leave because I'm flirtatious, or where you're unable to attract the right talent because you've now developed a reputation as a workplace that allows this sort of flirtatious behavior to take place, then surely that's bad for your business, and you should be able to come to me and say, "Listen, either you stop that now or you're out of here," or depending on the severity of it, say to me, "There's no place for you in this workplace. If you want to be flirtatious, go and do it on your own dime, but not whilst you're working here."
Good point. Johan, there's something that I picked up on Legal Talk. It comes from a guy called Stephen. It's quite upsetting, this, and it comes from a school kid. He says, "Guys, I just want to know the procedures of a sexual harassment case, as some guy smacked my girlfriend's ass at school, and she didn't like it. I have evidence of him admitting that he did, and what can happen to him as he's also still in school." Now, I think this happens quite a lot. This bullying that we've done, and it's not quite bullying. Guys are touching and pinching and smacking and doing what they shouldn't do in high school. And terrible
that's,
stuff.
That's wrong on so many levels. So within the workplace,
is that sexual harassment? Is that defined as sexual harassment at school?
I'm no expert on school law, you know. But if I just take on the general principles within the workplace, that would certainly be sexual harassment within the workplace. The Employment Equity Act tells us that harassment is a form of discrimination, and sexual harassment is a form of harassment, and therefore harassment is prohibited. Mm. With outside of the workplace, we've got the Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, PAPUDA, and that similarly outlaws discrimination, by extension harassment and sexual harassment, outside of the workplace. So I think a victim in that case would be able to rely on PAPUDA and approach the Equality Court with a claim for sexual harassment there.
Yeah. You apart can also get a protection order and all the rest.
Of course, apart from all the other normal civil and criminal law remedies. But I don't think anybody should labor under any apprehension. Just because it takes place outside of the workplace does not make it right.
What should Stephen do? I mean, should he go to the principal on this one? Or?
I would most certainly. I mean, I'm in involved now gets school in the school trust and the governing body, and I can say to you that sort of thing we'll take extremely seriously. I would hate to think that any school out there would not sit bolt upright when this sort of thing is reported to them. There's no place for it. There's no place for it in a workplace, no place for it in a school. There should not be place for it in our society. Do something about it.
What about sending gifts to clients to try and get more business sweet talking? How far can one go in whining and dining? Slightly off point, but off sexual harassment, but an interesting question that we got.
I mean, the issue that may actually tie all of this in is this whole notion of compliance. Compliance is big business at the moment. It's big business in law. It's big business globally. But when we look at compliance, we're not only looking at prevention of anti-money laundering or bribery or corruption. Compliance has a wide reach, and it also talks about compliance with HR policies and employment laws. So I think under the banner of compliance, certainly one should be extremely careful, you know, depending on the organization, depending on the country where you're operating in, as to how far you take this thing of extending gifts and courtesies to clients. What you will find, certainly in the time that I've been practicing, many clients are much more sensitive to this whole notion of, you know, getting gifts, being invited for golf days or taken out for lunch or even breakfast, you know. So my general advice to employees and employers out there is be very careful as to where do you draw that line. And if you don't want to see your name in the Sunday Times front page this weekend being linked to the fact that you have provided this business courtesy to a client, then don't do it.
Yeah. What about, I mean, you advise companies all the time on labor issues. If somebody comes to you and says, I need a sexual harassment company policy, is there such a thing that they can get?
Absolutely. And it's really good business practice to have a sexual harassment policy.
How does it read? What kind of thing is it having it?
Good question. So what the sexual harassment policy would typically state, you know, is that firstly, what constitutes sexual harassment, the organization's attitude and view on sexual harassment, namely, listen, this sort of thing is prohibited and is just not going to be tolerated with this environment, and then give practical steps and guidelines as to what alleged victims of sexual harassment can do. So this is the reporting line. This is to whom you should be reporting it. Progressive companies have even gone as far as saying, listen, like bribery and corruption allegations, we're going to set up an independent hotline that's been run by a big auditing firm, for instance, outside of the organization, where you can anonymously report allegations of sexual harassment. That's how you create the culture within the organization to say, we will not tolerate this, and you have a voice. We will listen to you. You know, you don't need to provide us with empirical evidence of the sexual harassment. This is the thing about sexual harassment. Very seldom does it take place in front of other people. There's very seldom other witnesses. You almost never have CCTV footage that shows the sexual harassment. You know, it's often the word of the victim versus the word of the perpetrator. But I want to let employees understand that our justice system is geared to deal with that. Often these cases of sexual harassment hinge upon what he said and what she said. And our courts deal with it. Our CCMA deals with that. The commissioner or the judge will evaluate the evidence of the one party and weigh it up against the evidence of the other party and decide which one of the two versions is more probable. Victims should not feel constrained from raising issues of sexual harassment just because they feel they don't have other evidence to back them up.
As a closing point, and just on the Harvey Weinstein case, we wish all the women all the best and we support them. For any people that are applying for a job, and there's an insinuation by the prospective employee that if you toe the line with me, you'll get the job. Give them the advice, please, the last bit of advice.
Do you want to work in an organization, you know, where that is indeed the case?
No, I'm desperate for a job, absolutely desperate.
I would, you know, it's easy for me to say. You know, I'm not one of the 27.7% people that are unemployed out there at the moment. But consider the impact that this will have on you on the long term. So my first advice would be is don't do it. And secondly, report it. Report it to the police.
Before you get employed, can you report it before you're employed?
This is the interesting thing about the Employment Equity Act, because applicants for employment have protection under the Employment Equity Act, including the protection against unfair discrimination.
Yes.
And as we said, harassment and sexual harassment are a form of unfair discrimination. So what you can do, you can actually lodge a complaint with the CCMA on sexual harassment even before you got employed.
Excellent. That's what I want to hear. That's what we want to know. So before you take up the employment and there's a suggestion by the prospect that you have to do something in order to get the job, and it's a form of harassment, please report it.
Absolutely.
Is that what we say?
100%.
Excellent. Johan, thank you so much for this. It's been great. I've enjoyed it. We're going to move on, and we're going to run a separate podcast now, which is called Sex at Work. And it's completely different, but we've got you in studio as a labor specialist. You'll enjoy that one to our listeners. Please find it on the separate podcast. Until next time, cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.